morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world. And welcome to the 13th episode of Developpod. Thanks so much for joining us. This episode follows hot on the heels of the report from the Teacher Development SIG and the Global Issues SIG PCE in the last episode. And that was talking about whether you're a social justice warrior. This episode goes into greater depth on a topic we promised: inclusion, representation, and diversity within English language teaching materials. So first we hear from Sergio Durant, a teacher in Jalapa, Mexico, and a regular contributor to the TDC. So we asked Sergio to give us an introduction into the current situation vis-a-vis diversity and representation within ELT materials.
We see the same status quo. We see, again, the standard native speaker telling what to do, telling other people what to do. And with this other, I mean, not just the non-standard native speaker, there are other minorities that are not even mentioned, that are not even pictured in these materials, like gay people, lesbian people, the disabled, old people. Well, if we continue with these kinds of representations, I don't think they help much to try to spread social justice, to have kids to critically analyze some of these topics. First of all, I think that these other needs to have a voice, because the majority of these lessons are centered in a white male native speaker going and do something for them. But we rarely see the other side of the story. I mean, we never read an interview of an African boy, or we never get to listen to an Indian talking about their own languages in English. As we don't listen to them, they are not models. I mean, the model we keep listening or reading is the standard native speaker. And I think this is very important for learners everywhere in the world. I think that it's not very easy to get motivated when you see your textbook and you see people that don't look like you. Or even if there is a picture of people that look like you, you never listen to them. You never, I mean, read them as if they were the actual user of English. And I think that if this doesn't change, even if you include certain topics, the result is the same. You get people that are not motivated, people that lose their interest because they never see themselves represented there. They never see an achievable model to follow.
Thank you, Sergio. Surely then there's a great need for the mainstream publishers to raise the bar in terms of how they respond to the needs of representation in materials. Surely they can do better than the ubiquitous fake accents that they still to this day include in textbook materials. So in the meantime, individuals and small organizations are filling the gap. Here is one such response to the need for greater inclusion, and that is in the form of a project called Raise Up, which is a new book written by our very own producer, James Taylor, who is a materials writer and teacher based in Brasilia, Brazil, and his colleague Ila Coimbra, who is a teacher trainer and materials writer based in Sao Paulo in Brazil. Tanya caught up with Ila, and she began by asking what was the main approach that they took to inclusion in materials creation.
What we try to do in this material is actually include these groups in the lessons, but not actually make the lessons about these groups. So the idea was, for example, there is a unit about texting in this book, and that talks about texting, exchanging text messages, and the exchange of messages happened to be among refugees, for example. So that's what guided us behind writing this book and developing this material. Mm-hmm. Try to not problematize, not have the problematizing approach to representation, like taboo and issues, but just trying to make this underrepresented group being there naturally, as they are naturally in society.
Right. So the difference being maybe a more traditional or, I don't know, old-fashioned approach being that the unit is about how refugees use texts. You have made it more, the topic is texting, and you're just incorporating the vast, vast range of people who text.
Exactly, which are also refugees, because that's how they communicate with their families. Another example that we have is the unit about the family, which is for lower levels. And there is the typical unit about a family with mother, daughter, grandmother, and et cetera. But there happens to be a lesbian couple there with a son. And it's there just as it is in society. So it's not talking about LGBT rights to get married or same-sex marriage, or it's just there as it is in society, because we do believe that, I mean, nothing wrong with a more problematic approach, nothing wrong with being more outspoken about what the minorities have to need actually to be visible. But we opted for this, as James likes to say, representation by stealth, just getting there, just putting them there as they are included in society. Also, what we try to do is get away of stereotypes. For example, if you think about the elderly, right? Elderly, when they are represented in the course books, they are, you know, in need of help. They are dependent of their grandchildren. Their life and their happiness is about having grandchildren, or they are the grumpy ones. So we try to not fall into the stereotypes that sometimes you find in course books.
Mm-hmm. And how has the response been to this positioning of your materials?
Well, I have to confess that we are quite happy with the results. We launched the book at the ATF conference in Liverpool earlier this year. One of the things that I guess would helped a big to have this big response to the launching of the book is not only the need that the LT world has for more inclusive material, but also all the profits from the book are being donated to a charity in São Paulo that shelters LGBT QIA plus members that were kicked out from home.
Oh, wow.
And so all the money is being donated for the cause. So I think this also helped a lot to give the book a lot of visibility. And we really got good feedback from people who have bought it. Mm-hmm. And people who have been using, I mean, this lighter or not problematic approach to representation really helps to use this book or this kind of materials even more problematic contexts. Mm-hmm. I've had many teachers who come to me and say, okay, I want to do that, but I have this and this and this problem. Mm. There is not a solution, one size fits it all solution. Sure. Yeah. I guess each context is a specific context. Mm-hmm. But what I can say through my experience with these teachers is this concern comes before they start using the book than during it. They're more afraid of starting out because they predict a lot of problems that end up not happening so far.
Interesting.
So far, again, it can happen and we are aware of that. But so far, nobody who has come to me or to us with these type of concern were like, I had this problem, what do I do? It's more like, I might have this problem, what should I do?
So thank you, Ila, and of course, Tanya. And if you'd like to buy a copy of that book, Raise It Up, then go to tailormadeenglish.com/raiseup. That's Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, madeenglish.com/raiseup. So last we're going to hear from Tyson Seaburn, our very own coordinator of the TDSIG and an instructor in EAL and assistant director at the University of Toronto. He will hear Tyson's own response to the need for greater diversity within materials.
I believe your research and your work has been based around LGBTQIA, the community. Can you first give us a definition of that?
Sure. I mean, I think most people are kind of familiar with the first three or four letters in that acronym.
Sure.
So they being lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. And sometimes the rest are represented with a plus sign, but increasingly people are naming them out. And so the Q would be queer most of the time, which is more of an umbrella term for the larger community who doesn't necessarily fall into or identify with any one of the previous acronymed letters. Mm-hmm. I would be intersex. So those people who are born with generally with genetic combinations of both genders. And then A is asexual. So those who really don't identify as being attracted to either gender specifically.
What need do you feel that there is for a greater variety of LGBT plus materials?
Well, I think there is really a very big need, considering the fact that it's been pretty well documented that our community is invisible in most materials, particularly those that are traditionally published by the sort of larger publishing companies and course books and things that are used throughout the world. So that alone suggests that a segment of the population is either underrepresented or just completely missing from the materials that we use with our students. And if we consider the fact that our students in any part of the world may be part of the LGBTQIA community, or the teachers themselves are part of this community, then we're, you know, really neglecting a large portion of the population that won't see themselves in the materials that they are being exposed to. So I think it behooves us to really try harder as educators in order to create this inclusive environment for all of the learners that may be involved.
I agree. If you allow me a personal example on that, I was teaching a CELTA course a few years back in the UK, and a teacher was teaching about marriage and lifestyles, very nice lesson. And I noticed a young man at the back who was completely absent from the lesson, just emotionally disconnected. And it struck me that it was very likely that that young man was gay. And mm-hmm. I suggested that this must be a possibility to the teacher and feedback afterwards. Mm-hmm. And she was mortified, absolutely mortified. And it may not be that teachers' intentions are negative or anything but positive, but the coursebook materials lead us in certain directions when we don't think about them.
Exactly. And I mean, it's, you know, it spills out beyond coursebook materials, like just to society as a whole. Mm-hmm. The heteronormative default that we're all exposed to, either through television or movies or advertising, there's a lot of people that are missing from these different avenues. And so I believe, as you once said, the classroom is a microcosm of the macrocosm. And if we take that as true, then the materials that we use in class should be representative, regardless of whether or not larger materials in society are. And so I think, you know, we really just have to try harder.
You mentioned at conference that indeed there is some reference to the LGBT plus community within materials, perhaps more supplementary materials. And that's not always done in a particularly positive way. Can you give us an example?
Well, without naming and shaming specifically, what I do think you're alluding to is the idea that there are many well-intentioned teachers out there, and those well-intentioned teachers may not be experienced with the LGBTQIA community itself or with materials design, frankly. And even materials writers themselves, those particularly who identify as straight and probably white, may not have quite the experience or the training to actually authentically write materials for LGBTQ inclusion. And in that regard, what ends up coming out are some materials that do include LGBTQIA narratives, but in such a way that unintentionally others that group, or maybe intentionally, but I think a large amount of the time is unintentionally others that group of people. For example, a really classic example is the debate structure, where you're taking a look at the rights of LGBTQIA community, such as gay marriage or, you know, adopting children, these types of things. And when a teacher provides that debate as a platform to use negotiating language or whatever language it is that you're focusing on, the power dynamic that's involved between the teachers and the students just necessarily causes the students to think it's okay to debate these things and that there are valid points on both sides. And in some cases, forces learners who may, in fact, be on the side of gay marriage to take the opposing side for the sake of debate. Mm-hmm. And so this is problematic, not only because we shouldn't be debating human rights in this type of way, but also because the LGBTQIA learners themselves, you know, you might imagine one of them is forced to take on the opposing side and argue against their own rights. And if there are none in the classroom, which, you know, is a possibility, then what we're doing by having a debate in this sense is creating a space where people from outside the community are making decisions about the people who aren't even there in that classroom. And for a variety of reasons, I find this incredibly problematic.
Tyson, what issues do you envisage in terms of teachers implementing materials, especially as we operate in a very diverse, multicultural, multinational environment?
I think the local context of the teachers and the learners is something to take into consideration. Having said that, I think there's an underlying issue with teachers arguing that it doesn't fit my context or LGBTQ isn't a thing I can talk about is really probably their own lack of training to some degree, because teacher training courses often ignore these issues in favor of something that is very sanitized and removed from social discussion. However, I think that these are issues, not just LGBTQ, but there are issues in the world that we all face no matter which context we're in. And we could make the argument that the classroom is a place where we don't want to talk about something that is difficult. However, our learners face different issues in different places, and LGBTQIA, whether or not you feel as though your classroom has LGBTQIA, is sort of your own bias. And there are LGBTQIA in every context, everywhere. And to assume that it doesn't work out in our particular context, I think, is really just an oversight. And so it really behooves institutions to provide more support for professional development regarding how to talk about any kind of minority group or any kind of social inequities more appropriately with their teachers. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, apart from that, I think it is just the fact that the materials don't exist. And so teachers are either ad hoc creating these materials without really putting too much thought into them, even though they're well-intentioned, or they're just presented with materials that are outside the context of their own learners anyway. The course books that are used in China aren't necessarily full of Chinese people, and yet many people will still use these course books that have white people and Western values and so on without really giving it too much thought. I think ultimately the same can be said for not having LGBTQIA in these materials too.
Back to the more productive, how have you responded in terms of producing materials?
So I think there's really two ways to go about it, which I talked about at IATEFL itself. One is a normalization approach and another is a disruptive approach. And so when you look at those two, the normalization approach really focuses on the increased frequency and regularity of including a wide variety of individualized LGBTQIA narratives among the many narratives that are in our materials without specifically focusing on the LGBTQ-ness of it specifically. And so this might display itself in terms of having an audio track where students are focusing on the language of, say, compare and contrast as an example, yet the people in the audio script themselves represent a wide variety of different groups, some of which would be a lesbian couple or a transgender or what have you. And so they would be revealing themselves as such through whatever language it is that they use, such as using they and them or he and her pronouns. But the lesson itself doesn't focus on that. It focuses on something else. And they're just a sort of byproduct of having a diverse group of people within the materials themselves. Mm-hmm. And so by doing this more regularly, instead of including it into sort of one LGBTQ unit or having no LGBTQ at all, this is exposing students to seeing LGBTQ in a sort of normal way, as opposed to being something unique, special, or strange. So that, I think, is step one in terms of inclusive practice for LGBTQIA materials. And then a disruptive approach is sort of step two, which is more challenging and maybe something that would be better discussed on a, in a lengthier segment than, say, right now.
I believe you are prepared to share some of your own materials. Is that right? And could you give some details of that, if I'm correct in that assumption?
Yeah, there's, based on the talks that I've given recently, I am publishing a mock-up course book unit that displays this normalization approach. And the materials actually are pretty much the ones I've described to you here. And so that will go up on my blog not too long from now, as well as an example of non-coursebook materials, because, I mean, let's face it, a lot of us don't use coursebooks too. And so we pull together these materials from different sources. And so I'm going to show an example of a disruptive approach, which, again, is something that is a little bit more complex and takes a little bit more care in putting together. But those will be both put up on my blog not too long from now. And hopefully people will use them, spread them, enjoy them, critique them, whatever they feel like doing.
Thank you. And what's the name of your blog?
It's For C and ELT. So you would go to FORC.ca.
Thank you, Tyson. So today we first heard from Sergio about the need for greater inclusion and representation within materials. And then we heard two responses, first from Ila and then from Tyson. Both of them mentioned two approaches. Firstly, a problematizing approach or a disruptive approach. And secondly, a normalizing or integrating approach. And they really focused both of them on the second. Ila, in fact, mentioned representation by stealth. I'm not sure I'd go with this term, but it may be the way forward in terms of an approach. I did wonder whether Tyson perhaps downplayed the difficulties faced by some teachers in some cultures. But indeed, all of us need to keep educating ourselves, stay ever vigilant for our blind spots, and sometimes make brave choices. So thanks for listening. Do take part in the chat and tell us what you think on Twitter and Facebook. And please tell your friends. Be inclusive. Ciao for now.